Hi everyone, and welcome back to another episode of One Health, One Community. The next guest is Dr. Salazar, an expert in infectious disease. He is the chair of the Department of Pediatrics and a professor of pediatrics at the UConn Medical School, and he is a physician-in-chief at Connecticut Children's Medical Center. He has completed extensive research, teaching, and clinical work in relation to infectious disease, so I'm excited to learn more about his work in connection to One Health. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Salazar. I'm so excited to hear more about your take on One Health and your involvement with it.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me, Marlee. This is a great honor, and happy to discuss my take on health issues in general, and especially the pediatric world and what it means, and the research that I do. To me, we are One Health. To me, means that we're part of a community that involves people, of course, at the center. But it also involves our environment and all the elements of the environment, which includes our animal colleagues, our microbiome, anything that surrounds us. We are inextricably linked to that surrounding us. And if we want to achieve optimal health, we need to understand all those elements that affect our health, that affect our well-being. And you can't really free yourself up from one or ignore one, because it will affect the other one. And I think, to me, that's the concept of One Health, which is, how do we live in a symbiotic relationship with our own bodies, that composes our own organism, which includes, 80% bacterial DNA, by the way. The environment we live in, depending on where we are, which obviously has a relationship to global climate and global climate change, and what we do to the environment and what we don't do to the environment, and then the animal kingdom that surrounds us in ways that allows us to live at peace with it. And we, unfortunately, although we are supposed to be the superior element to the One Health component, that sometimes we don't act that way. And I think in the end, it's going to affect us tremendously if we don't pay attention to it. So that's the way I see it as One Health. There are other definitions that would be that when One Health is also globally, how it represents our citizens, fellow citizens throughout other parts of the world, that sometimes in the more wealthy industrialized nations, we think we don't have to pay attention to the rest of the world, and we do. COVID-19 is the best example of where we're linked to each other. There's no such thing as being separate. This is one community, and we have to interact with each other, with our environment, to obtain optimal health. That's what it means to me, Mom.
That makes sense. That's a really interesting way to describe it too. So thank you. I also know that you are involved with the UConn School of Medicine. So I was just hoping to ask you a little bit about your involvement with that and what you teach.
Thank you for the question. So I'm a professor of pediatrics and immunology at the UConn School of Medicine. I'm also an adjunct professor in pharmacy at UConn Storrs. And I also have an appointment as a professor at Quinnipiac University School of Medicine. My lab, my basic science translational lab, is at the UConn Health Center, and what I work on is my research is on something called spirochetal research. That's a specific type of bacteria, and there are two types that I focus on. One is Borrelia burgdorferi, which is the agent of Lyme disease. A lot of people know about Lyme disease, and boy, is that related to One Health. And then the other is Treponema pallidum, which is another spirochete that causes a pretty damaging disease called syphilis, which is a venereal disease, also a congenital infection. And so my work for the last probably close to 25 years now has been looking at how these spirochetes, both T. pallidum and Borrelia, interact with the human host and cause disease, and also how to prevent disease, specifically with syphilis and the development of a vaccine against syphilis, which doesn't really exist right now. So that is my uh, that's my specific area of expertise and research. Now, it's not only in the lab. My research is also on the field. And what I mean by that is, these diseases affect people, and you can only do so much in the lab. You really have to go out and look at people and how they develop both Lyme disease, which is the agent that's the disease caused by Borrelia, and also syphilis, which is caused by Treponema pallidum. So now each is a little different. Each interacts differently with people, with the environment, with health, and the ecosystem that surrounds each of these diseases really defines what happens to them. But that's my research. More recently, I've like most translational scientists, I've also started working with COVID-19, with the SARS-CoV-2, using sort of a similar model that we've used for the other diseases, and with a specific focus on children and how they develop complications associated with COVID-19. So those are the areas that are relevant to me. I do teach at the medical school. The way I've done that is working with graduate students as they develop their PhD. So I've had students, PhD students in my lab that have graduated to get their PhDs. And I also have had postdoctoral fellows in my lab as they follow their PhD training to do additional training in the lab. So that's one area of teaching. And then at the children's hospital where I do my clinical care, obviously I have medical students and residents as they're training to become doctors.
Is there something that stands out to you as being your favorite? I just know that you talked about a bunch of different interests, so I was just wondering if there was one that stands out to you most.
Well, I wear multiple hats, and so it's maybe I have attention deficit disorder because I like to do a lot of things at the same time. But I really love trying to understand new things as they evolve in the disease process. So research is really exciting to me because you're really going into a new frontier. And I remember a few years ago with one of the papers that I authored with one of my postdoctoral fellows, it was looking at white cells and how they interact with the Lyme disease bacteria. And it was on a Saturday morning, the postdoctoral fellow was doing an experiment in the microscope, and he came back very excited because he had seen something that he knew it was important, and it had to do with how the innate immune system senses bacteria and triggers inflammation. And this was the first time this type of sensing had been described. And so sometimes when you find something completely new that no one has ever seen before, you have to confirm it, of course. That's really exciting. That's something, and then you get to publish it, and you're the first one who's actually published on something. And now you go back and 10 years later, everyone's publishing on this now, but it's kind of cool to be that first one that made an observation based on an idea that a student had, that said we should look at this, and the student was right. And then you come up, you interpret it, and it's like, wow. So innovation, discovery in any field is something that really excites me tremendously. Now, I do love clinical care. So taking care of children and making them better and seeing them improve as they come into the hospital and then they leave is also something that gives me a lot of satisfaction. And I couldn't not do that. I always have to do part of my job, and I have multiple activities, but the innovation discovery and then taking care of children and seeing them go through the process of getting better is something that's really exciting to me.
Is there something that like originally prompted your interest in the type of research that you do or the career you have now?
Yeah, I was a resident here, pediatric resident here in Connecticut back in 1988, a long time ago, through 91. And back then, I was a chief resident. As my chief resident year, Connecticut was already in the midst of a Lyme disease epidemic. The Lyme disease spirochete had been discovered in the mid to late 70s. But around 1991, 92, there was a lot of Lyme disease, and it was affecting a lot of kids. And one of the questions that came up was, if you treat them appropriately, do they get better? And there were two schools of thoughts. One is that even if you treat them, kids don't do well. I never believed that. I always felt that the antibiotic was a good antibiotic, and you gave the right treatment, those kids should get better. So I was a brand new chief resident that was much younger than I am right now. And then I had a great mentor, Mike Gerber, who said, well, you can answer that question, do a study. And so we teamed up with a pediatrician in Old Lyme, Connecticut, of all places. And Dr. Kit Goff, I remember. And then we did a study back in, this was 1991, where he actually had an electronic health record, which was one of the first people that actually had that in the country. And we were able to go back, look at the charts. And I made phone calls to every one of these kids who had had Lyme disease and had received treatment. And I asked questions scientifically whether or not they had complications. And the fact is they had done all really well. So we were able to collect the data, publish it, present it at a national meeting. And that small paper that was something that I did actually defined the features that basically said, if you treat Lyme disease appropriately in kids, they're gonna do just fine. That led to a larger NIH study that was done by my mentor. That was much more expensive. And to this day, that paper that was published it came out in 1992 in the literature. That was my first paper. It's still one of the papers that people cite as saying, kids who get treated for Lyme disease actually do well. That to me was really cool. It was like, oh wow, you can do a chart review and actually publish something that actually changes the way people think about something and how they treat them and how they follow them. And it was on Lyme disease. When I came back from my training, my fellowship, I wanted to come back to doing Lyme disease research, and that propelled me into going back to the lab, retraining, doing additional training, and that obviously resulted in the kinds of things that I've been doing now for the last 25 years. So it's the thirst for discovery and a proper mentor that will lead you to do some cool things, fun things, and hopefully some great things. And if you follow that lead and you are persistent, you'll achieve your goals.
That sounds great. I feel like that's definitely something that people and students at UConn really need to hear sometimes. I know that there's always new information coming in relation to One Health and just new events happening in relation to One Health. So I was just kind of wondering, how do you continue to learn about One Health and just kind of stay on top of this new information?
Well, I think the way I approach these issues, and because it's a nice catchy phrase. To me, what's really important for the students is to understand that everyone everyone can play a role in this process, and that you can't live in silos. You can't live in silos in terms of what surrounds you. You can't live in silos in terms of the people you interact with. The most important thing I can tell you is that you have a purpose in making sure that we have a great environment, that we have a great part of the animal kingdom, and then the people that we serve, the people that we work with, the people that are part of this world, there are things that they're you can actually interact with them, and you can influence them, and you can change them, and you can in a positive way. So get out of the silo. Sometimes we live in Connecticut, it's a pretty shelter environment. You need to get out of that silo and begin to see how you as a student and future professional can actually change that and change each one of those areas. And the fact that you can't change all of it doesn't mean you have an excuse not to do something about it. You really do. And if best example for the UConn students, which I think is pretty cool, is the every year you do a dance-a-thon. Or it's called a Huskython, right? For in support of Connecticut Children's, which is where I work. And the pandemic came, and last year, even though the pandemic was still thriving, the students raised $1.1 million for the children. And every year, the year before it was even more, it was $1.5 million. This was a little more challenging because of the restrictions of the pandemic. And that's part of One Health, by the way, is that you can do something that's meaningful, even if you give a dollar, just that sense of purpose as a group is benefiting children that have cancer, that have other diseases. So we can, so you're participating in that change in the world mode, which is what I believe in. And it's one person at a time, but each one of you has the ability to make a huge difference for any of the elements of what we call One Health. And so it's a message of optimism. And the other thing I say, if I said it through the pandemic, is related to COVID, right? I mean, we all have a responsibility to ourselves, but also to our community. Getting vaccinated is one of those responsibilities. And, you know, some people may say, well, I'm young, I'm probably not going to get sick. Well, first of all, you don't know that for sure. But the most important thing is that you're a conduit to passing on a virus to somebody else if you're not vaccinated, even if you're asymptomatic. And you live in this environment, and you live with people, you live with you know, animals that surround you. And so we have a responsibility that's not just for ourselves, but our surrounding communities.
Yes, I definitely agree. I think that how you mentioned also, just kind of like taking any small steps towards a shared goal, I think is progress. I think sometimes like big goals can seem overwhelming. So just knowing that just making any progress is moving towards that bigger goal, I think that's really inspiring too. And also, of course, doing your part is also really important.
Yes.
I think that answers my last question of how students can get involved. So I think that is all I have to ask you today. But I just want to thank you so much for providing your perspective on One Health and talking with me today.
Yeah, Marley, thank you. And I, you know, my last quote for everyone is, in these troubled times is be not afraid. You know, young people generally are not, be not afraid, but there's a caveat, and that's be not afraid, but be responsible. And that combination is what will get us through to the North. So thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed the questions.
Thank you all for listening, and be sure to look out for more episodes of One Health, One Community.